This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Joyce Goh, and you're listening to Pressing Matters Right Now, the show that goes behind the headlines, where we speak to members of the press on their stories. Today, we have Khairi Hisham Aliman, Assistant Editor of the Edge Media Group. Khairi, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Joyce. Thanks for having me. It's lovely to be here.
Good morning. Khairi, recently you wrote an article this week in The Edge based on Khazanah Research Institute's report that was released last week entitled The State of Household 2018, Different Realities. A number of big issues came up from that, such as the widening income gap and gender inequality. Talk to us about the key takeaways from this. What were the main core differences in realities that struck you most?
Well, as I sat there listening to the presentation and then the panel discussion and later the press conference and having gone through the report myself, what really struck me is that when our economy kept growing over the past years, what happened is that that growth did not filter down to a lot of people. Basically, as we move forward, some of these people were stagnant or moved backwards. And basically, the economy just didn't grow in a way that trickled down to them and improved their lives. So now if we pick out some of the data points that illustrate this contradiction, if I may, if your household was earning 2,000 ringgit a month or less in 2016, chances are on average you would have spent away about 95% of it by the end of the month. And some of these households, right, they would only have about 76 ringgit left as disposable income. And these are after, you know, the basics like transportation, putting a roof over your head, food for the kids and all. So that's the reality for a lot of people out there. They don't have much disposable income. It's really hard for them to save, to invest, to engage in wealth creation. And if there's an emergency or something unexpected comes up, their car breaks down, for example, they're in deep trouble. And more often than not, I imagine a lot of these people would be pushed towards increasing debt and taking out loans, which further worsens their financial situation. And what really hits me, another part side of it, is that for households that earns a bit more, say below 5,000 and below, they were paying more for food in 2016, but they were actually consuming less food. So You're eating less food, but you're paying more for it because the increase in food costs has outpaced the inflation in general.
The baskets of goods.
Exactly. Mm. And this is data from 2016. So what we don't know is whether things have worsened or has it improved. And if you recall, I mean, obviously, the economy grew about 6% in 2014, 5% the year after, and 4.2% last year. And the economy is growing. It's expanding. GDP is rising, but somehow these people are moving backwards. They're not growing. In fact, their financial capacities are shrinking.
Well, working on the story, Khairi, I realised you spoke to Dr. Nunsari Rathi. He's an economist who is on the KRI Board of Trustees. And also you quoted Alan Ng, the lead author of SOH 2018. That's the State of Households 2018. Did they share with you as to how we can start narrowing the income gap?
That's an interesting question, I think, because what really came out during the discussion is that the picture we have of the economy, it's vital to get the picture correct. Mm. If we look at the data in the State of Households report, the latest one, this is the first time that granular data was made available from the Department of Statistics. Before that, we were looking at the national level, whereas now we know that the reality on the ground is different depending on where you are, where you live, which state you are in, your education level. And same goes for your living costs and whatnot. So what really emerges here is that targeted policies are crucial. And we can no longer rely on blanket policies that are executed or implemented, for example, nationwide, whereas it may have different to no impact, or worse, it may be resources that try to help but end up not doing anything productive. So that getting that accurate picture, I think, is the first major step that we can do.
Well, getting an accurate picture, I think Khazanah Research Institute, they argue that policymakers, they need to think beyond the Gini coefficient and include measures to address the absolute earnings gap. Why do you think this is the case? Do you have, you know, well, while working on the story, did you come across any stats to support this?
I think it goes back to the picture, you see. if we were to go by the Gini coefficient, which measures relative inequality, over the years it has declined. As of 2016, it was at 0.399. It was at 0.5 something in the 1970s. So if we go by that measure, it has declined.
Mm-hmm.
But if we go by absolute figures in terms of the gap between the T20 households and the M40 and the T20 and the B40, the absolute gap in terms of figures has actually widened. Now, it's a contradiction because on one hand, one measure tells us that it has increased. The other tells us that it has widened. So what it comes down to is that what kind of picture do we want to see, and what we need to see in order to come up with effective policies. Now, the Gini coefficient is useful. It tells us that relative inequality is decreasing. But on the other hand, it does not help us formulate, in this case, I imagine, a targeted policies that can be effective. So I think what we need to relook is what kind of measures we need to balance in order to come up with the right picture that would enable the right policies.
What do you think is the core issue here? Do you think it's because, well, lack of policies, or is it because there's no follow-through when it comes to implementation? Or do you think it's also an issue with the private sector not wanting to up salaries? You know, while you're working on the story, what did you come across?
That's quite a heavy question, I think. And it's a complicated economic picture, and I do believe that at some point we're going to have to ask a proper economist on this one. But What struck me during the formulation of the story is that about two-thirds of our Malaysian workforce, they work for SMEs, small and medium enterprises. That's about two-thirds. And the problem with SMEs in Malaysia is that, one, we are less productive. If you compare large enterprises and SMEs, large enterprises are up to 2.5 times more productive. And second, our SMEs are also found, according to the report, to be less invested in technology, meaning they are more labor-intensive, I imagine. Mm-hmm. So what that leads to is that, one, how much salary we get depends on, one, how much productivity we are producing, mm-hmm. and second, how much the employer is capable of paying. And how much the employer is capable of paying comes back to profit and productivity. So it's a cycle, I guess, in that sense. And I'm sure that a lot of listeners would recognize this discussion as going back to recent discourse on how our economy is undergoing some sort of premature deindustrialization towards services, whereas we haven't really gone into high-value manufacturing enough to justify a shift towards services.
So it's like the economic structure. That's what you're talking about,
exactly,
right?
Yeah.
So how much value can our current economic structure generate? I mean, you know, the economic structure, it influences what sort of pay we can get. Did the report provide any recommendations for the current economic structure that we are in?
Well, it did look into the economic structure and why we kind of we're kind of experiencing the problems that we are. If the thing is, we kind of bucked the global trend when we looked at the labor income share from 2005, when the data first became available. Our labor income share since 2005 to 2016 has increased by 7.5 percentage points. On paper, this is good because more of the income is going to the labor component, which is people, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when KRI, Khazanah Research Institute, looked deeper into why this proportion is increasing, they found potentially problematic results that could be counterproductive in the long run. The first is that the labor income share is rising because the share of services sector in the economy is growing. But the problem is that the services sector is primarily domestic driven, and as a result, not so high value, and goes back to how much the employers are producing and how much productivity there are and how much pay they can subsequently afford to pay. And another aspect is that more people are self-employed these days. And another worrying trend is that a lot of the sectors in the economy where the labor income share has been rising, some part of it is driven by a shift towards more labor-intensive activities, meaning they are moving towards more labor-intensive, lower skilled, as opposed to investing into technology to go higher productive. And in the long run, that's going to hurt us because what we aspire to be is a high value, higher skilled, higher productivity, and subsequently, hopefully, a higher income economy.
I'm speaking to Kari Hisham Aliman, Assistant Editor of the Edge Media Group. After this, we'll continue our deep dive into the Khazanah Research Institute report that was released last week entitled The State of Households 2018, Different Realities. Stay tuned to The Morning Run, BFM 89.9. Good morning, you're listening to Pressing Matters, and our guest today is Kari Hisham Aliman, Assistant Editor of The Edge. Kari, earlier we were talking about income inequality and your article this week in The Edge entitled Breaking the Cycle of Inequality. So when it comes to income inequality, the great equalizer here is education, you know, but there is the great divide when it comes to access to education. How do you think Malaysia can equalize this? When you were working on the story, what did you find out?
All right, that's a great question. I mean, obviously, education, from the data that was presented, education is a big factor. If we look at the average household incomes, if your household head has a degree, you're probably earning, on average, 3.6 times a household whose head does not have any certificate at all. Now, so on paper, if you look at the enrollment rates for primary and secondary schools and universities, we're producing quite a lot of graduates. So on paper, that looks good. There is an underlying problem there because there's a mismatch basically in terms of the supply of labor and the demand for labor. Now, if we go back, right, to the State of Households report, it says that between 2010 and 2017, we were producing more tertiary educated workers than in any other education level, mm-hmm. more graduates than any other education level. But in the same period, we are creating more semi-skilled jobs than any other type of jobs, meaning a lot of these people are overqualified for a lot of the jobs out there. And that's a deeper problem that goes back to the inequality of household incomes and what it does to your prospects. Mm. Let's go back to the households earning about 2,000 ringgit or less, right? They exhaust most of their incomes at the end of the month. They have about less than 100. So for the kids in school, can they afford that extra reference book? Can they afford extra tuition to up the quality of their education? It's really hard to say. And I imagine a lot of people out there at this income level, they cannot. But thankfully, we have public universities, PTPTN, for example. So they, if they do well, they can still dream of university, hope to go into university. But if you compare that to other households earning higher at about 15,000 ringgit or more, these people exhaust only about 45% on average of their incomes. That's a lot of leftover, right? Mm-hmm. They can invest, they can save. And more importantly, if they feel it's necessary, they can invest to increase the quality of the education that their children are receiving. And over time, these build up. So when you look at the international schools, for example, clearly that's a thing. Some townships, property developments have international schools as an attraction. The number has almost doubled in the past 6 years, I think.
Yeah, from 66 in 2010 to 126 in 2016.
Exactly, and clearly that's demand. Mm. Now, when push comes to shove and there's a limited number of graduate-level jobs available and we have an oversupply of graduates of varying quality, education quality, what it comes down to is who can edge out the competition. And clearly, on an average basis, I am imagining that graduates whose families are able to invest into better education have an advantage. And there's an opportunity cost in the sense that the graduates who are not so well off in terms of background, they may not get the jobs that they studied for. And it comes back to what an economist said to me. Increasingly, your starting point in life is having a growing and more significant role in your future prospects, which severely limits your upward mobility potential.
Well, Kari, the KRI report also shows up the lack of quality when it comes to the education sector here in Malaysia. Well, no surprises there. But what I found surprising was that the data that showed that our students are getting less value when it comes to the number of years spent in public schools. Like, for example, Malaysia has a high gap between actual schooling years and quality-adjusted schooling years. We have about a 3.1-year a difference, right? Kind of like wasted 3 years in school. So what can be done to overcome the education problem that has been an ongoing issue for decades now? While you're working on this and speaking to people on the ground on this, did they talk about, you know, are they looking at, you know, some suggestions or some things that you're looking at to improve the education problem here?
Well, I think in terms of the education sector, the problems are well documented and well discussed at this point. So I feel it's up to the current government to look into the already identified issues and see what can be done. But you're right, the gap is 3.1 years, and it's quite a wide gap. And if you imagine, if we go back to the unequal resources available to parents, parents who can bridge that gap for their kids would obviously be able to confer to their children a significant advantage over those who had no other choice but the public education system, isn't it?
Yeah, because if you look at Singapore, it's there's no gap at all. Mm-hmm. It's zero, right? It's only in Malaysia, we're looking at 3 years. If you look at Thailand, it's 3.2 years. But if you look at Hong Kong, it's 0.6 years. South Korea, is 0.4 years. Mm-hmm. So it's also an issue of education, but also the access to better education, right?
Exactly. And ultimately, what it shows to us is that when we seek to tackle inequality, it's not just about creating equal access to opportunity, because equal access to opportunity for a lot of people doesn't really mean much if you are starting at different starting points.
Mm-hmm.
If your disadvantages by virtue of luck, for example, what households you were born into, is not offset by some sort of corrective measure.
Yeah, speaking about inequality, we also have the report also shows up a gender inequality that continues to be a persisting problem. Statistics show that even though half of working age Malaysians are women, only about two-fifths of the labour force, women only make up only two-fifths of the labour force. You know, so about 53% of working age women participate in the labour force compared to 78% of working age men. Why is that the case?
That's right. I mean, based on the data presented, the key thing that separates these percentages seems to be what was categorized by them as housework and family responsibilities. Now, I think that probably the term housework may be a bit simplistic. It's probably a lot of things like family responsibilities towards the elderly parents or babies and that sort of thing. But the gap is quite stunning. It's 58% of the women outside of the labour force last year was because they had some sort of housework or family issues that prevented them from joining the labour force. That's equivalent to 2.6 million women. In comparison, the corresponding percentage of men who cited the same reason as being outside of the labour force was just 3.2%. That's 70,000 men. 70,000 versus 2.6 million women. So that's clearly a big disparity, and what it shows us is that our women in the nation is shouldering disproportionately these kinds of responsibilities, which get in the way of their participation in the labour force. And of course, there's an opportunity cost. KRI, the Kazana Research Institute, has found in the report that if we can somehow increase the employment levels of women in our economy by just 30%, our national GDP could increase significantly, anything between 7% and 12%. So there's probably a lot more that could be done here to alleviate the burden and enable these women to join the labour force.
Yeah, if we look at the research report, they also note that there are improvements in equal pay for women. I think in 2013, women earned about 8.3% less than men. But in 2017, that gap narrowed and women earned about 6.2% less than men. However, younger women had less wage disparity than older women. So look at the stats. Women in their mid-20s to 29 years old, they earn about 0.2% to 0.8% more than men in that age group. But as they grow older, women like who earn women in their 40s to 50s, they earn about 6.5% less than men. And if they're older than 55 years old, they earn 16.4% less than men. Why do you think this is happening here in Malaysia? When you're working on this, what can be done to address this?
I think the underlying reasons are probably unclear at this point. It's an interesting trend reversal, and the wages data is only available from 2012 onwards.
Mm-hmm.
So KRI is calling for more research into this, and hopefully we'll find out further in the near future.
Okay, but definitely I think this is something that when it comes to inequality, we're talking about salaries inequality, but also gender inequality that is a factor that has come up from this research report. Yeah, something else that has come up is also KRI found that foreign worker employment was not driving lower hiring of Malaysians. Could you share the findings from this?
I believe that depends, really. On one hand, most of the foreign workers, most of the 2.2 million foreign workers, about 95% of them are in the low-skilled or semi-skilled category. So they're not occupying the same space as Malaysians who are better educated, who are higher educated and higher skilled. If you have a degree, for example, you're not competing with these foreign workers, most likely. But these foreign workers, they take up the low-skilled jobs, the lower-paying jobs. And there's a World Bank study in 2013 that highlighted the effects of this on our economy. Basically, the least educated and lowest skilled Malaysians are affected by jobs displacement and wages suppression. So there's a lot of competition for about 1 million Malaysians who are in this category from foreign workers, but that competition is not felt by the high educated Malaysians.
Okay. I'm speaking to Kari Hisham Aliman, Assistant Editor of The Edge. Thank you, Kari, for being on our show today. It was great having you on Pressing Matters this morning. I'm Joyce Goh, signing off for the morning run. Stay tuned for the 10 a.m. news after this, followed by Enterprise at BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.